Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for our Movies and Booze. Deirdre Malumbi, Jean Smullen and Serena Bellissimo. Join us once again. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
The Roses, Deirdre, is just a crappy remake of The War of the Roses.
I haven't seen The War of the Roses, but I did thoroughly enjoy this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you did.
You seem so surprised.
You haven't seen... Well, but The War... Yeah, okay. All right, fair enough.
I'd imagine they've kind of updated a number of elements of it. Isn't that usually what they do with the remakes?
And it was Danny DeVito and Kathleen Turner, I think. Okay. And it was more...
And
a bit
Michael
more,
Douglas.
Michael Douglas.
Yeah, it was a bit
was
more slapstick, you know. But it was nasty, as I recall. And it was quite a fun film.
I think part of the strength to The Roses is you've got a terrific cast. It's led by Olivia Colman and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
They play this married English couple who kind of come over to America, and part of the humour comes from these, like, you know, culture clashes and stuff like that. Really interesting kind of director and writer behind it as well. The director is Jay Roach, who...
Okay, you'll start your reviewing now.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
so stop now.
I'll let you all know. I'm just teeing it on. Yeah. And the other one is Caught Stealing. That's kind of like a heist movie.
And kind of crime drama. So yeah, very much a counter programming. But I enjoyed both movies immensely. And Caught Stealing has got a great cast as well. You've got the likes of Austin Butler, Zoe Kravitz, Matt Smith, and Regina King in there.
And Matt Smith is a fantastic Mohican in this.
Yes, it's very impressive. He plays like an English punk rocker guy. I'm not going to attempt to do the accent, but he sounds great.
Yeah. Right. So Gene,
rosé to start with. I mean, first of all, I know. Yeah. Game here all week, you know, whatever they say. End of summer. And so it's one day it's really warm, next day it's really cold, you know, the usual stuff. So I thought we'd have two wines that kind of reflect that. We've got a really good rosé from the south of France, in case the weather does get good this weekend. And then a Rioja Crianza. Actually, Rioja as a region is going to be 100 years old next year. So I thought it would be worth having. I mean, yes, I know.
Gosh, I would have thought it was
older
than that.
No, I mean, in terms of since they founded their DO and, you know, regulated everything and, you know, sort of put the stamp on it and said, we are a region and this is our wine style, you
know. Okay, then just tow over a bit of land and say, we'll call that one Rioja. There you go. That's where we make the wine. Two stories about documentaries about making things, or films about films, kind of almost. They're going to do a documentary about the Gilmore Girls.
I know. I can see the disdain on your face, but I can't help but smile.
That's just my normal face. Actually, yeah, even when I'm happy, I look like this.
Well, when I saw it come up on my social media feed, I did get excited. I went to investigate. I cannot believe that Gilmore Girls is turning 25 in October. So to celebrate, what they're doing is they're having a documentary about it. And why I think this is going to be fabulous and why I think it's really going to work is that all the cast and, well, most of the cast and crew are involved in the interviews. Apparently they've already recorded 100 hours worth of interviews. They said there's some great stories to come out of it. They're going to investigate why it was created, but more so than that, why is it still a cultural phenomenon? Like, why are people still into it? I mean, I love it. My 14-year-old daughter has just gotten into it. So why 25 years later is it still resonating with generations that didn't grow up with this?
Yeah. The initial run was years ago, and then they kind of resurrected it.
Yeah, and there was a resurrection, and I did, you know, I was a bit worried when they did that. I was going to call it a rebirth, but it's not a rebirth. A reboot. And all the cast came back, and that was good as well.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm thinking this might be like is, do you remember when Friends did their reunion without doing their reunion? Now that was, I still love it and I'll still watch it when it's on, but it was a bit cringy. I don't think this is going to be as cringy because it's going to be more a documentary film, not in front of a studio audience. And you're talking to the cast and crew. It's recorded interviews, so, you know, you get a chance to edit that stuff and the really good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's fan servicing, really. Now,
this isn't
a documentary. Is this a kind of a dramatic?
Yes.
This is a movie about the making of the film Rocky.
Yes.
Wow. Now, okay.
You know that Rocky is one of my all-time favorite films.
Yes.
And in my house.
I'm not dissing Rocky. It's just an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's an interesting take as well. And Sylvester Stallone, while I don't think he's involved in the production of it, he is behind this idea. I mean, who wouldn't want to be behind an idea about a movie that is like talking you up and is all about you? To get Rocky to the screen was a bit of a tough slog for Sylvester Stallone.
And he wrote it. He wrote it. Yeah.
And at the time, the studios loved it. And they said, I can't remember what the amount of money was, but they offered him a hefty amount of cash and said, this is a great script. We don't want you, though.
Ah, right. Yes,
and he turned around and went, well, that's okay. Well, then you don't get it.
Yeah.
And then he went on to win an Oscar for it, not for his acting, but he went on to win an Oscar for the film. I really love that. I haven't heard of this actor. It's Anthony Ippolito, but apparently he portrayed Al Pacino in the Paramount Limited series The Offer. So he's going to play Sylvester Stallone. And there's a bit of a like-for-like story in that he saw this role come up and he was like, this is mine. I want this. He did a self-tape. He sent it off to the producers. They like what they saw. He has Sylvester Stallone's blessing. I cannot wait to see what they do with this.
Okay, so it's more about the struggles with the Hollywood system and all that kind
and
of stuff.
Him. Yeah. So it's called it will be called I Play Rocky, and I can't wait to see. Like we all know the Rocky story. This franchise is one of MGM's greatest franchise. It's taken in $1.7 billion globally, not just for the Rocky films, but
Crikey.
They're also including the Creed spin-offs in that. So,
You
know, Rocky has a great story to tell. Sylvester Stallone has a great story to tell. It's not going to be about his life per se, more just this this time in his life, bringing Rocky to the screen.
Well, no, I can't, because I would find that quite interesting, because you might think Sylvester Stallone, you know, started acting because he had... I think he had boxed a bit previously, but he really wanted to be a filmmaker rather than, you know, somebody brought him in because he was a, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of those people. He wasn't that, you know.
He wasn't. So, and actually, was it Netflix that had the, I can't remember which streamer it's on, but there is a really good Sylvester Stallone documentary about his life. I think it's a 3-part series as well. And he talks a lot about his early life and stuff. So if you can't wait for I Play Rocky, go check that out. But, I cannot wait to see what they do with this.
Someone says it's amazing the degree to which we've run out of ideas. I can't wait for the movie about the making of Heart of Darkness, a filmmaker's apocalypse. Actually, that would be an interesting film, actually, because that was apparently disastrous. The original War of the Roses film, someone said. Michael Douglas, not DeVito. No, they were both in it.
Yeah.
It's just that Danny DeVito is small and you may have missed him. But they were both in it. They both had very prominent roles. Somebody wants to know, Gene, what's the best rosé to drink in a sauna? I have no idea why.
Oh, I have absolutely no answer for that. I mean, a cold one would be the obvious answer. They're in a sauna or they've just bought one.
Somebody. I imagine if you could afford a sauna in your home, ask one of your staff.
Is drinking alcohol in the sauna kind of, you know, negating the objective, which is to sweat all the badness out of your body and make yourself feel a bit more healthy?
Yeah. Apparently, Sylvester Stallone is something of a genius. He's in Mensa, according to a texter.
Okay, I would never have thought that about Sylvester, but I'm not going to knock him.
No, but I mean, you can be in Mensa because you have a high IQ. I don't know if that makes you a genius.
No.
It just means you might be good at puzzles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Is Sylvester Stallone good at puzzles? It might be great at puzzles.
Possibly.
And you can have a high IQ, but it's all about emotional intelligence.
Watched Rocky? It's amazing.
Yeah.
The high intelligence.
Adrian!
Stop, you're bringing a chin over my shoulder.
I was like,
running up the steps to the great soundtrack. That was a great bit.
Isn't that on everybody's bucket list? Like, that's on my bucket list, to run those library stairs.
Oh, I have done it.
Have you done it?
Yeah.
What's that feeling like when you get to the top?
Oh, really? You're really tired.
You want to throw up?
Did you do the hands in the air, though, spinning around like Rocky?
No, I don't think I went quite that far.
Isn't there a statue at the top of him doing just that?
Yeah, that one's fun. I posed next to that one.
Is that the equivalent of touching Molly Malone's boobs? Now you have to do this run when you're up there.
He's actually too high for you to reach. So.
Oh, no. That you just do the stance rather than you make any lunge for him kind of thing.
Yeah, but
it's amazing your mind went to that, Deirdre.
I tried, Sean, I failed. Yeah.
Anyway, let's get back to wine again. Let's get wine. Tell us about this one.
All right, so this is the Domaine Saint Blaise, and it's I've featured this before. Laurent Miguel, very, very famous producer from the south of France. And the reason why, because his wife is Irish, Nessa from Fox Rock, and who I know them both, and they're lovely people. But he is actually a really, really good winemaker. And what I particularly like about this wine is it's organic and it's fully certified organic according to strict Swiss organic certification. I tasted this a couple of years when they launched it on the market first, and I absolutely loved it. And I thought, well, you know, it's the end of summer. Oyster season is beginning from September. So if you were looking for something, a really nice Class A rosé to go with any sort of fish, definitely this is one. This is made in a place called Saint-Chinian, which is an appellation down in the Languedoc, near their family estate, Cazalvielle. It's made from three grapes, Marcellin Roll, which is Vermentino really, but we're not allowed to say that anymore. It's Roll in the south of France now, and Grenache Gris. It's that lovely pale pink Provençal colour. But what I love about it is that there's a gorgeous minerality on the nose. There's certainly plenty of summer fruit, and you're getting lots of that on the nose. And then when you try it, this is lovely. It's dry, bone dry. You get this gorgeous kind of crunchy cherry kind of thing going on in it, and lovely acidity, really well made. And it's been in Ireland now for a couple of years. You'll get it in Tesco. I think O'Brien's might have it. Dunn's, it's for various places around the place. But Domaine Saint Blaise, lovely, lovely rosé, and made by a very good winemaker, Laurent Miguel.
Adam from County Clare says, just looking for a recommendation for a nice rosé to drink in a dark wardrobe while crying. I suppose this would do the trick.
Or, you know, if you're crying because you're broke, then why not go for something like really expensive, like Chateau Escalin, which is really the premium one for Whispering Angel. That'll set you back about 65, 70 euro, and that'll make you really cry. So that would work in a wardrobe for me.
Yeah, you might have to sell the wardrobe.
Yeah.
So would you like to talk about the roses first, Dave?
We'll start with
the
roses.
Okay, we'll talk about the roses after this break.
I suppose sometimes I do hate you.
Funny.
No, seriously.
What?
Don't you have that when your whole body is seized by dizzying waves of hatred?
Jesus.
Really? You don't have that? I thought we all did, married people. And, you know, you just have to let it go. And it'll pass like a wave crashes somewhere on a beach in the Pacific. I mean, put aside taking it personally.
Put aside the dizzying hatred you have for me?
Sporadic dizzying hatred. You really don't feel like that about me at all?
Well, the other day I did think if Charles Manson invited me on a picnic and if you invited me on a picnic, I'd go with Charlie.
Charles Manson?
Yeah, Charles Manson on a good day.
What, a jamming with the Beach Boys day as opposed to plotting a murderous rampage day?
Don't take it personally.
There you go. That's the roses rather than the War of the Roses. Now, compared to the original that I alluded to, this is kind of more English and low-key, really, in a way.
Yeah, that's how I'd describe it. And actually, you can kind of see the influences of the production team here, because the director of the film is Jay Roach, and his past credits would include the Austin Powers movies, actually. Remember those back in the day? And Meet the Parents. Meanwhile, the writer of it, Tony McNamara, his work has been a bit more contemporary. People might have watched The Great, The Favourite, and Poor Things. And I think it's kind of interesting because Jay Roach, I suppose, from those credits, you kind of associate him with more a kind of like silly kind of zany, I suppose, comedy style, whereas Tony McNamara is kind of sharp satire, and they're both very good at that kind of awkward English comedy as well, I suppose. And the two just gel to really good effect. So I just found this film very funny. I was laughing frequently at it. But at the same time, this is also the story of like a marriage breakdown and a family torn apart. So there is this kind of like tragic, like kind of storyline interwoven into it as well, which I found kind of quite touching at times, really. And you really do feel for both Ivy and Theo, who are played in the film by Olivia Colman and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Now, is there, as in the original film, Danny DeVito's role is like he's the lawyer and he's basically trying to stir things up between them. Is there an equivalent to that in this?
I think it's quite, I think it's different in that in this particular film, the kind of law aspects of the separation aspect of it is quite short, I would say.
Okay.
It's kind of really kind of drawn out in terms of like we see how competition and resentment between the couple kind of builds up gradually over the years. And then when it gets into the actual like divorce part of it, where you have Alison Janney and Andy Samberg, representing Ivy and Theo, those kind of sequences are quite short. In fact, I think Alison Janney, even though she has like fifth credit or something, she's only in one scene in the movie, which is kind of funny. So if you're expecting her to be in it loads, don't basically. And another cast member I have to give a shout out here to is Kate McKinnon. Like I find Kate McKinnon absolutely hilarious anyway. She's so funny, but so weird in her sense of humor. People definitely recognize her from like Saturday Night Live sketches over the years. But I actually find like no matter what role she's given, no matter how small in a movie, she always just makes the most of it. And she's the best thing about it. But yeah, it's a great cast here. And some of the ensemble scenes are like the best scenes in it as we see those kind of culture clashes. You know, at one point there's like this dinner scene where Ivy and Theo are kind of taking these little like nicks at each other, and then when the Americans attempt it, they're just like outwardly mean, like they don't get the subtleties of British communication. So it's fabulous that
So it is, did they make a big thing, does it seem quite deliberate there are a British couple living in the United States?
Yeah,
because is that a distraction, or is that anything to do, I should say, with the breakdown of their relationship, or they just happen to be there?
I would say that it just, yeah, it's more that they happen to be there. And I suppose it kind of goes through the nuances of the fact that they're both English, but they're raising their kids there, and their kids would be kind of more all American, I suppose, more so, having grown up there and everything. But it's really what's kind of the catalyst for the breakdown of their relationship is that initially when they decide to raise a family, Ivy's career, she works as a chef. She decides to take a backseat and kind of stay at home with the kids while Theo is the breadwinner. He works as an architect, but basically all that changes when an incident causes Theo to lose his job, and then a positive review launches Ivy to stardom. So essentially they end up swapping roles. Theo becomes the homemaker. He decides to raise the kids with a very different, much stricter regime than Ivy would have parented the kids. Her style was much more liberal. So that's kind of a source of tension. Obviously there's kind of resentment there, and even Theo, who kind of readily admits he's acting like a total like jerk to Ivy, he can't help but feel all of this frustration and all of this envy at his wife, essentially. And you just see, like, you know, them going at each other and everything just starts to crumble. And there is something kind of tragic about it. But at the same time, the lines in it are so funny and so witty that you can't help but laugh. And they go to such extremes. I think it's probably, from what you're describing of the War of the Roses, it's probably the latter half of the film when you get into the slapstick stuff and the really outrageous things that they do to one another, which is more like the War of the Roses. But that kind of gradual build up, I think, is very done. And like I said, Coleman and Cumberbatch are just so perfect at the couple who like adore each other so much, but they can't help but want to kill each other.
Times. Darren and Cora, because I saw the Guardian slated it.
I know. I was just saying this to Serena, because Serena was actually at the same screening as me last night, that they gave it 2 stars, which I thought was very harsh and wrong.
Yeah. And see, I wonder, because Deirdre and I often go to these press screenings, and literally when you go see a comedy, it can be tough, because in these press screenings, sometimes you can feel really awkward because you may be the only one laughing.
Yeah.
So you're talking about like a dozen people kind of scattered throughout the audience. It's
bitter
not ideal
hacks,
for a comedy.
You know, and I go out for a cigarette.
last night, it was great to watch this with an audience because there was real laughter, like laugh out loud, raucous type laughter. Mm-hmm. And I think that added to probably our enjoyment of the film. So I wonder if The Guardian watched it in a sterile environment,
maybe,
or an environment like that, because it does make a difference.
Yeah, I wonder that difference in perception, because that was probably a British reviewer reviewing it and going, maybe that's not a...
How dare they represent us?
Well,
like
maybe they felt it wasn't a true representation, or somehow it was off the British part of it. I don't know.
At the same time, it is meant to be satirical. You know, you watch something like The Favourite or Poor Things, and you wouldn't say that's an exactly perfect representation of what's The Favourite about, like, you know, the Queen or anything like that, you know? So.
I don't know. Please ask that woman, that's Eugene, that woman, what she said about Vermentina, why not allowed to something.
Oh, right. Sorry, I should be more clear. Vermentino is the name of the grape. It's an Italian grape, but it's widely planted all over Mediterranean France and Italy. The Italians kind of gained a march on the French by saying, well, it's our grape. You're not allowed to call it Vermentino. So in southern France, it's now called Roll, R-O-L-L-E. Ah. It's still Vermentino, but it's just a bit of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
War of the Roses between grapes. Yeah. Oh, I'm good. I want a rose. Yeah.
And can you repeat the name of the first wine, the rosé that you were talking about?
The name is Domaine Saint-Blasé.
There you go. They went to see Eddington in the cinema last night. What stood out for me was the sound production. Something I would have missed. Excuse me, I had to watch it at home. Yes, the cinema is too expensive, but a great way to turn off your phone and enjoy a film as it should be. Use it or lose it type thing. So everyone should try and get a movie now and again. Maybe they should bring the prices down, says Darren in Cork. Have you seen Eddington?
I haven't seen it. No. But I'd agree with some movies are just better in the cinema. And I would say The Roses is definitely one of those. You need to see it with an audience and laugh and smile and enjoy it along with them.
Eileen says, I'm just in. Heard your topic on Rocky. I believe he was so broke that he sold his precious pet to help the situation. What kind of a pet?
He did. It was a dog. He sold his beloved dog. But
that's definitely going to be dragged out in the movie.
Of course it will.
You can just see the big scene crying over the pet.
That's where we get the tears. And then the reunion, because I think he ended up buying the pet back. So
he did, yeah. Eileen says so. He bought it back. And the guy he sold it to and then bought it back from, he gave him a role in the movie.
Yeah, see, like, come on, we're all looking for Rocky. Come on.
Well, maybe, though, the guy was going, oh, you want him back now, do you? You know, what's in it for me? So anyway, as we all know, if we're terrorized by demons, we should ring up some K-pop stars. But this is now officially huge. Among a certain demographic, of course, we'd be familiar with that demographic. Yeah. You may have given birth to some of them.
Yes. And it's funny because, like, it's huge. It's huge with all kids and not just a lot of people would say, oh, this is just for the girls. Nope. My son and his mates have watched this time and time again. And as a result, it has now amassed, and this was only out in the last few weeks, 236 million views. The last, the one that was on top was Red Notice starring
Dwayne Johnson, Gal Gadot, Ryan Reynolds.
So that got a really bad review from critics.
Yeah.
But that was still number one on there. But this is getting rave reviews from everybody, so much so, well, from the kids watching, so much so that this went into, so usually when something's put on a streamer, it stays on the streamer. It doesn't necessarily go back into the cinema.
Yeah.
But in Australia and in America, it went back into the cinemas for a weekend just for sing-along. Huh. And in America alone, in one weekend, it made, was it 20 million dollars for just 2 days in the cinema, which is now $20 million for an opening weekend. Most people go, that's not much, but it is when it's been
already in a streamer. Yeah.
The other thing that's happened is, and you've noticed if you've got kids, as you said, of a certain age, you'll know Soda Pop and all these other songs that they're singing.
Yeah.
Four singles are in the US 100, Billboard 100, in the Australian top 10 as well. So, like, it is going mad. Sony have partnered with Netflix for this. They were the ones that actually did the animation behind this. They're already talking about sequels. I heard the other day they're talking about possibly taking a live show on the road. They're also talking about, and I'm wondering, did they put the sing-along in theatres for the fans, or did they do it because now they can enter the Oscars, because they're talking about entering this in the animation.
Oh, of course. Yes.
For the Oscars.
All right. I know it's an animated film, but there isn't like an actual group, or will they perhaps create a group?
This is going to be the interesting thing. And they can't just create any group. They have to sound like the K-pop groups that they've got in the film. So this will be a really interesting one, because, you know, when you're just thinking about vocals, you're not necessarily thinking about how, you know, the X Factor, how everything's going to look. So it will be interesting to see if they do change the group or if they'll use the original voice actors.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much in every house.
K-pop's
all right.
And actually, if you're into K-pop this weekend, and it's something that I'm going to be sitting down to watch this weekend on Apple TV, there's K-Popped, which is pitting Korean K-pop bands with bands like, you know, the Spice Girls, Kylie Minogue, taking songs that we love in the Western world and trying to K-pop them. That's available on Apple now to watch. Can't wait to watch that. Some of the biggest stars are on that.
Okay.
There you go. If more K-pop.
I never thought I'd heard somebody use a sentence to me, if you're into K-pop. I'm reading from a piece of paper here, just in case you didn't notice. So Devil Wears Prada 2, yeah. Have they finished shooting or?
I think they're still shooting in New York. One thing that surprised me with this, and actually lately, especially if they're filming on the streets of New York, I thought there'd be more of a close set. I know you're probably not into this either, but I'm sure you've seen photos of Devil Wears Prada 2.
I'm more aware of this than I am of K-pop demon hunters. Other than it was on a TV in front of four girls stuffing their face with pizza last Monday night in my house.
That's, do you know what? And then you'll be all of a sudden singing this song going, where is this song?
Where is that coming from? Yes.
But most people will be aware, even if you're not following Devil Wears Prada and you're on social media, you'll see photos of Meryl Streep, of Anne Hathaway, of Stanley Tucci in their roles actually on set. The paparazzi are getting so close and so are fans that sometimes what's being put out is actual dialogue. You can hear what the characters are saying.
Hmm.
And something that I'm worried about, like selfishly for me, where's the surprise gone? I want to go into a theatre and not really know what's going on. I just want to be surprised by the film. And this is what filmmakers and studios are worried about. So they're wondering if New York can introduce a law that has happened in LA where they just stop the paparazzi from taking footage like this and being able to actually profit from footage that they take from their film sets. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
Yeah. But might they be doing it deliberately to generate a bit of buzz in advance, perhaps?
And so apparently this happened with the new Spider-Man film. I think it's filming in Glasgow. And they did bring some people on board to actually film some of what was happening and release it onto social media because it does create a buzz. But then we have to remember people have really short attention spans. We get over things really quickly. So you don't want the buzz to happen now in 2025.
Yeah.
And when the film releases in 2026, you're like, but I've seen it. I don't know. And you forget that you haven't seen it. You've only seen what's on social media.
You've seen some paparazzi version of it. God, yeah, that'll be interesting. But like, so has this been happening a lot or just for particular scenes?
It's happened a lot and it's happened before this as well. So like when Gaga was starring in Joker for Lea Dur, all the paparazzi were on top of her as well. And what the studios are saying as well is just like, you know what, it's not even just stuff getting out there. It's what it's costing us as a studio. It's slowing production down and we're having to beef up security. So where their security budget may have been X, it's now X and some.
Yeah.
So it's having a real effect on studios and their productions.
Yeah. Now, this is possibly the most bizarre story of the week. Julia Roberts is narrating A Leonard and Hungry Paul.
Did you read this book?
I did.
Yeah, I don't read very many books. I watched the movie.
it was like the one Dublin one book last year, the year before. It's a very sweet book.
It's a beautiful book if you don't know any. And it's a book that you're reading going, I don't know really what's happening, but I'm feeling all these emotions reading it. It's two friends.
Yeah, not much happens in it. It's really.
But you walk away going, but that was actually really beautiful. And now it's filming, it's going to be a BBC series, and they've gotten Julia Roberts to narrate it. I didn't think you'd need a narrator, but then to get Julia Roberts to come and narrate it. And the people behind it are saying they're thrilled that she's doing it because she's amazingly talented and we heard she was a big fan of the book and she brings a real warmth and genuine compassionate understanding to this important role which guides us through the unique world and special characters. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, but it's very much a Dublin book. Is are we going to get Top of the Morning from Julia Roberts or American Julia Roberts? Narrating the lives of people who live in North Dublin.
I'm hoping we might just get, like she'll play the outsider that we are as the viewer. So I'm hoping we'll get American and not Michael Collins' Julia Roberts because that won't work for me.
You see, I'd be worried about that.
Oh, I didn't.
No, they haven't said, have they?
What we should about it? Let's think.
Yeah,
let's just.
I know. It's just because I know you probably go, Julia Roberts, cool. Yeah. We can't say no to that. But actually, would it be a good fit for?
Would it have been better to actually have a Dublin voice?
Yeah, a Dublin voice, like a kind of Irish mammy kind of voice going in there.
But then, are they just trying to open the appeal? Not that I'm not saying that Dublin voices aren't great.
Yeah.
But are they trying to open the appeal to everyone, saying you don't have to live in Dublin and be a part of this story to actually fall in love with the story. So we have a neutral person narrating what's happening. Can we go with that and not with Michael Collins, Julia Roberts?
Is it set in Dublin, actually, by the way?
Or well, it's,
They've set it in Los Angeles or something. That's what it is.
I don't think it's set in Los Angeles, but it's the BBC are behind this. So has it moved to the UK? That's something that I'm not sure about. But it's in it's in Northern Ireland, so possibly it may have moved up to Belfast.
All right.
Made that last bit up, by the way.
You did. All right. Yeah, but it's probably true. It's colonialism all over again.
News Talk's Summer Cash Machine.
There you go. Congratulations to John and his huge extended family. Let's toast his good fortune, Jean.
Okay, we've got the 2021 Marquis de Atrio. It's a Rioja Crianza. We actually drink a huge amount of Rioja in Ireland. We really do. We are the 11th most key market globally for Rioja wines, right? Now, this is a country of over 5 million. Obviously, United Kingdom's number one, Germany number two, USA number three. But we love Rioja wines here in this country. And they have worked, the region has worked really, really hard to keep their wines visible. And I suppose it helps the fact that the first, I suppose, package holiday started in the 1970s. And lots of Irish people used to go to Spain and they started drinking Rioja. And that love affair has continued for 50 years. So I love Rioja myself, and I was actually lucky enough to visit there. I was there in July, and oh boy, was it hot. Oh my God. But anyway, moving on. This is made by the Rivera family, who've been making wine in Spain since 1899. They're based in the Rioja Alta region, because there's three specific regions in Rioja: Alta, Alveza, and Baia. And this wine is made by a man called Rodrigo Espinosa, who's worked for the family for many, many years. It's a blend of two of the region's key grapes, red grapes, Tempranillo and Graziano. And it's had been aged for 14 months in French oak barrels and then for 2 years in the bottle. I just think this does exactly as it says on the tin. It's a crianza, which means specifies the amount of time that the wine has been aged for. 12 months in barrel, 2 years in the bottle. It's complex and delightful. And now that we have the ore in the month coming up, we'll be starting to make the stews and we'll be starting to sort of put on the cardies again. And if you want fancy something, the winter warming wine in September, when, you know, when, oh my, it's that night. Oh God, we have to turn the heating on again.
Oh, stop.
This is the one to go for.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. That's absolutely is gorgeous. Yeah, that sits up and says hello to you, doesn't it? Yeah. I'm surprised. Kay Wins is going to a directorial debut. I'm surprised she hasn't done it before.
Me too. So the film is called Goodbye June. And I love a lot of things I'm talking about today, but I love this because this is a script by her son, Joe Anders. And she's going to serve, as well as directing, she's going to be producing this. And she also features in this. It basically centres on four siblings whose lives change when their ailing mother takes a turn for the worse over the holiday season. So I'd say this is going to be a weepy. This is going to go, it has a release date now. It's happening thanks to Netflix, but Netflix must also think that this may be an Oscar contender because it's going to cinemas first.
Oh, right.
So unless it goes into cinemas, it cannot put itself forward for Oscars.
Yeah.
So it's going into cinemas on the 12th of December. And then if you're looking for a cheery Christmas Eve movie, this appears on Netflix on the 24th of December.
This is where I go into old man mode. Wasn't there a film like this? I can't remember who was in it, but there was women in it and they were sisters and they were looking after a parent who was dying. It was an American thing.
I saw that. I remember seeing that.
Oh, the Netflix one.
Yeah.
Oh, His Three Daughters, was it?
There was actually one that went into, I remember seeing, it was a couple of years ago. It was somebody really good. It was a good cast. And I remember crying buckets at the end.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, never mind. We'll never know. The listeners can text in 17 different suggestions. Was it the father? No. That sounds like a whodunit. Was it the father? Right, but anyway, I love Kate Winslet.
I do. And
she's
brilliant because she says it as it is as well. Yeah. And she's been in this business for so long. And she's assembled an amazing cast. I mean, Helen Mirren, Toni Collette, Stephen Merchant in this as well, Jeremy Swift, Andrea Riseborough. I can't wait. So we don't have to wait that long.
Oh, that's such a nice tie together. Because wasn't Kate Winslet so key to Andrea Riseborough getting that Oscar nomination?
She was,
yeah,
too.
Because she was like talking about how great her performance was. Oh, that's such a nice tie together.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, she's one of the good ones, all right. It must be said. Right, we'll move on to our second movie. It is called Caught Stealing. Here's a clip.
What the hell happened?
The last call. Drink them if you got them.
Let's go back to your place and you can take advantage of my poor judgment.
I depend on your poor judgment.
I want to know if I can take this seriously.
What do you need to take us seriously?
Come on, kids. Get a room.
Sorry, Miss Kitty.
Oh. Oi! What are you doing, geezer?
Is that the best you can do?
I've got to fly back to London. I need you to take care of my cat.
I like cats.
I like dogs.
Hey, is Russ home?
Who are you? What's the big man?
There you go. That film may have been called Still Alice. Rory says no. No, not the one we just heard.
Wasn't Still Alice the one with
Julianne Moore?
Yes, and she had dementia.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really sad. But it wasn't that one.
I'm liking this guessing game, though.
I like this guessing game. It's like a really bad pub quiz, is what this is. Right, so, but back to the film at hand, Caught Stealing. Even from that, it sounds all very kind of rock and roll and everybody looks hip and it's a bit tongue-in-cheek kind of
stuff. Yeah, like it's quite Tarantino-esque, I would say. Yeah. It's kind of a mesh-up of genres, kind of heist meets crime genre meets dark comedy meets murder mystery. And it's a funny one because the director of this is Darren Aronofsky, who people might remember did like Requiem for a Dream, The Wrestler, Black Swan, Mother and the Whale. And while this is probably a lot lighter than his previous works, because the main word that comes to me with Darren Aronofsky is disturbing when it comes to his movies. There is still a lot of kind of darkness to it, but there's kind of a comic book aesthetic as well, because you've got Charlie Houston, who is the writer of it. He adapted the screenplay for it as well, and he has a lot of kind of comic book writing credits to his name. But yeah, this is an interesting one. It's kind of got like it features torture and violence. There are beatings, there's mobs, grimy locations, chases, murder, money and corruption, all set against this backdrop of New York City in 1998. And you would have heard there in the clip, Hank Thompson, played by Austin Butler, and his girlfriend, paramedic Yvonne, who's played by Zoe Kravitz. And basically, they're entrusted by their neighbour, English punk rocker Russ, who is played by Matt Smith, to mind Russ's cat, whose name is Bud, and he is adorable, while he goes out of town. And basically, this one act of cat sitting basically launches Hank on this twisty trajectory of betrayal and violence.
The cat.
Cat sitting the cat.
Sitting the cat.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Minding the cat.
Yeah. Okay. But you can't tell us how the cat is. So they're not actually criminals doing a job or anything. It's just the cat somehow gets them involved in
trouble. You'll see. I thought that was kind of a nice way to tease it.
That's kind of weird. Everyone's guessing what this film is I'm trying to think of, and they're all getting it wrong.
Deirdre was right.
What?
Deirdre was right. We should always listen to Deirdre.
Okay.
It's His Three Daughters, starring Natasha Lyonne, Elizabeth Olsen, and Carrie Coon.
That's the one.
Yeah,
yes, that was the one.
I think it did get a limited cinema release before it went to Netflix. I saw it in the last year, actually. Terrific movie. I think it's one of Netflix's best. If people haven't seen it, it's very, very good.
Okay. Jean, the name of the wine again?
Oh,
which
I'm
we get
sorry.
Every time.
It's the Marquis de Atrio. It's a 2021 and it's available in Tesco.
Okay, there we go. Now, at a time when there is a paucity of ideas, this is one instance where I think people might actually genuinely get excited by what is just, we haven't got an idea, so let's do this. They're going to make a Knight Rider movie.
What are you talking about, Michael?
Yeah.
I have to admit, another one where I went, and I'm the one always banging on going, can we stop with the reboots, with the remakes? But then I hear that Kit might be coming back to our screens and it could be being brought back by the three lads who were involved in Cobra Kai, which ran successfully for six seasons on Netflix. And that was the spin-off from Karate Kid, starring Ralph Macchio, and it brought back some of the original characters. So we don't know anything, but the internet's gone crazy just learning the fact that there are talks for a series to possibly happen based on Knight Rider. Will David Hasselhoff be involved? I don't know. what will Kit look like in today's day and age?
Yeah, see, the weird thing is that that car looks like a Tesla. Yeah. Anyway,
there's an idea.
Yeah, there's an idea. No, but it does.
Yeah. Who get involved in that?
But like, do you remember, I used to love watching what Kit and Michael would get up to.
Yeah.
Would you enjoy seeing this again?
I would.
Yeah, so
I was kind of strangely excited. That's actually a novel idea.
Yeah, and look, you know, we give out about the reboots and remakes, but we also need to realise that there is a generation that hasn't seen any of this, and that's why Cobra Kai was so successful, because we all went back for nostalgia, but the kids went back as going, this is actually a really good idea. So sometimes good ideas need to be rehashed in a different way.
Yeah, and if they get I suppose they could, because a lot of it was like the car and the Hoff riffing off each other. So if they get that right, then that's a lot of it.
And then it means that we can have Kit back in our lives. I remember going to the Royal Melbourne Show and lining up to have a photo with Kit, which I'm sure wasn't the original Kit, but how much excitement was there of getting into the car?
From my generation, it was Herbie and the Love Bug.
Oh, Lindsay Lohan, we love Herbie and the Love Bug.
The original one.
See? Tell ya. Can't wait for Knight Rider versus Airwolf. At the time, like, Kit was like, he could talk and drive itself. And now that's like almost reality. So I don't know. They'll have to give
Kit
some kind of superpowers there.
Christine?
Yeah. Anyway, that's all to look forward to. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Serena and Jean and Deirdre.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.